And so next, we're really lucky to have Elizabeth Corley, the CEO of Allianz, speaking to us. She described herself to me just now as the whipper-in of the fantastic work which Chris and City UK have been doing coming on from the Glen Eagles conference. So, Elizabeth, if you could kick us off. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you, Ryan. Well, it's a real pleasure to be here. And a number of people have said to me, why is Allianz Global Investors bothering to sponsor a pensions conference in the UK? You don't do a lot of business in the UK. It's very interesting. We do a lot of business globally and a lot of business in Europe. And what happens in the UK can have an impact on European policy, and it can help to shape the global dialogue. Many of our customers are global or international customers, so what happens here is absolutely crucial to the German company that's got a UK corporate. It's absolutely vital. But there's a second reason, and that's because of my personal background, which is British, and I've been in the life and pensions industry for 35 years. And I see this as the golden opportunity. We have no idea how fortunate we are that pensions is not a political football. We've got no idea. It's a privilege to have a country where you have cross-party support for pensions and incomes in retirement at a time of a demographic time bomb going off and at a time of low growth prospects, tremendous concern and other political debates going on. Many other countries are choosing to put the pensions time bomb into the political arena, which, as everybody knows, means the chances of success and progress diminish to zero or even negative. So I would really applaud what the minister's doing, and also the fact that we have sustained this cross-party support. I also think, it's feedback from the mics, thanks. I also think that, yes, it does take a long time, 10 years, but if you have cross-party support and the whole spirit of the JP Morgan Glen Eagles conference, which is, it's not just cross-party, it's cross-sector, we have the regulators, we have the industry, we have advisors, we have representatives of the union and the employers, all engaged around a particular topic. My job is to spend 5 minutes saying this is not a hot air room, it's not a hot air balloon. The whole point of this morning is to try and move this debate forward. 2017 is scarily close, scarily close. And if we don't overcome the industry, advisor and other divides in the same way that our government has managed to sustain the way in which they have a cross-party support for this, we will be letting down the consumers of the UK. And I'm delighted that the City UK has chosen and helped Chris to take this forward. But every single part of the industry has a responsibility to work together and put aside historical divisions. My job is to say, don't let's go on about what's wrong. Let's focus on what we can do by getting it right. And I think one of the first things that is becoming clearer is we have a pensions minister and a policy which is, let's not keep changing things, let's create certainty. So we don't have a spider's web of uncertainty and change. Now, it's interesting that the IORP was mentioned. There's an assumption in the IORP that there is enough capital in the world to support the liabilities from the aging demographics. There isn't enough capital in the world to support the demographics. I would love somebody to do a PhD paper and prove that. But if I listen not just to our own company, where we provide variable annuities, capitalized products, as they're called abroad, or with-profits products, when I listen in the low interest rate, low return environment to what the shareholders think of the returns on that capital, I think it would be very, very stupid for policymakers to assume that those products continue to be available in the breadth and depth that they are now. The implications of Solvency II are massive on the insurance industry, let alone the pension sector. And the realities of that are going to start to bite in the next year. And that's something to bear in mind. So this work, this means of trying to find something which moves from 100% capitalized guarantee for an aging population that is growing to a middle way, I think is going to become a global topic, despite the fact that you've got very different opinions at the moment, simply because of history and industry structure. I borrowed this from some work that the NAPF did with the PPI last year. What tends to happen in any difficult area is the discussion polarizes around one or two themes. And scale happens to be one of the themes at the moment. But the reality is getting this right requires many, many things being got right. And the minister mentioned several of them. So scale is hugely important. Not just scale, but passing on the benefits of the scale to the beneficiaries who need it, which I think was very interesting to hear from, from Mr. Cooper last year at the Gleneagles conference, talking about the role and effectiveness of efficiency. Trustees should have an efficiency target, not just a financial return target. But also, what do you do with that cash? What do you do if annuities actually are almost impossible to provide anymore because of the capital requirement to back them? What do you do to avoid the cliff of having encouraged people to build up a pot in a safe, affordable, effective DC scheme? There is then nowhere for them to put the cash. And that is going to come sooner than we think. So thinking about this in a joined-up way and trying to avoid certain aspects of it becoming the key themes, I think, is very important. There is hope. When the minister mentioned the US, what the US has realised is that DC schemes were hugely popular. Employers diverted a huge amount of employee saving into their own stock. And the outcomes of that were seriously negative. So there's been a lot of thought about the qualified default funds, actually as a diversification away of employer risk. But there's been a lot of thought also about trying to encourage people back into DC when they saw other companies' DC plans disappearing when the companies went bust. And one of the themes is about how you change behaviour. How do you get auto-enrolment effective? Building trust back into the system is key, and that's everybody in the room and beyond's responsibility. Having the means, the products, the information, the advice to encourage people then to save is important. This is the Save More Tomorrow, which is getting some coverage over here as well. Plan participants were given three choices. Do their own thing, immediately increase their savings, or save more tomorrow. So in other words, when your pay goes up, when your salary goes up, you save more. And the reason they did that is because people are very, very averse to sacrificing present gain for future benefit. And the cliff goes down very fast. What happened was the people who were in the save more tomorrow started as basically the savers who didn't want to do very much. And over the period from 98 to 2002 became the group that were saving most into their DC schemes. This was done by scheme design, by information design, using behavioural finance as well as product design together to encourage the way in which employers could get auto-enrolment into a means of escalating contributions without people's natural aversion to it getting in the way. So I think there is a lot of hope, and I think the way in which Nest is starting to engage with behavioural finance and other things, the way in which we're seeing industry practitioners changing the way in which they contribute and contribute to scheme governance, I think there's a lot here that we can get better. And there is a virtuous circle. And I think what I'm hoping the panels will do in the next morning will be to think about how we can get real about creating the virtuous circle. Whether it's a framework that's created by good governance standards, which are voluntary codes, which can happen straight away. We don't need regulation to create voluntary codes on governance standards. Whether it's done in a more regulated environment in future. There are things the industry, advisors, and regulators can do in this circle right now. And I think the focus of the DC working group that emerged out of Gleneagles last year is trying to make some real and concrete changes that don't rely on the pace of regulatory development. So I'm very excited about this morning, and I wish you all a very good conference. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Elizabeth. I thought it was a particularly fantastic slide with the extra bits that you could do to go from 2,000 to 7,000 pounds. It's very arresting. So I thought we'd try out our red and green. So in response to what the minister was saying, do we think that DA can succeed without any extra regulatory changes? Is the question. You don't have to vote the way that Steve votes. So can DA succeed without extra regulatory changes, or does it need regulatory changes? Okay, quite interesting. So about more, but maybe a bit more red than green, I would say. So, but I guess I would take that as saying that there's an awful lot that the industry can do to move towards DA, working with employers, but that the government has got things that it can do as well.